Om Agnate Minandasya Dhanandana Sulakaya Chaksu Sumilitan Dena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Dena Bhutale Swayam Pragadamayam Radati Sabandantikam Vandu Kapatim Vascha Kripa Sindhu Vahivasa Titram Bhavine Vyo Vaishnavi Vyo Namo Namaha In the 20th and 21st verse of the third chapter of the 8th canto, Gajendra had prayed, and this was the final verse that we read yesterday. Unalloyed devotees, pure devotees, who have no desire other than to serve the Lord, worship Him in full surrender, and always hear and chant about His activities, which are most wonderful and auspicious. Thus they are always merged in an ocean of transcendental bliss. Such devotees never ask the Lord for any benediction. So this is a very high stage. I, however, am in danger. Thus I pray to that Supreme Personality of Godhead who is eternally existing, who is invisible. So he's not quite sure who that Lord is, what he looks like. Although he's sure that he exists eternally, who is the Lord of all great personalities, such as Brahma, the topmost persons, he is the Lord of those persons too. No one is more topmost than him, and who is available only by transcendental bhakti yoga. Being extremely subtle, he is beyond the reach of my senses and transcendental to all external realizations. So he can't actually, doesn't know in one sense so much about him compared to the aspects of the Supreme Lord that Sukadeva Goswami will reveal in the 10th canto. He can't really say so much. He speaks about the Paramatma features, the qualities of the Lord, but he can't say anything about that personality of Godhead, Bhagawan. He is unlimited. He is the original cause, and he is completely full in everything. I offer my obeisances unto him. I'll read from here, from 22 till the 29th verse, which will be the completion of the prayers. Then we'll read some purports. The Supreme Personality of Godhead creates with his minor parts and parcels. That's the jiva tattvas. The individual souls, beginning with Lord Brahma, the demigods and the expansions of Vedic knowledge, the Sama, Rig Yajra, and Atharva Vedas, and including all other living entities, moving and non-moving, with their different names and characteristics. As the sparks of a fire or the shining rays of the sun emanate from their source and merge into it again and again, the mind, the intelligence, the senses, the gross and subtle material bodies, and the continuous transformations of the different modes of nature all emanate from the Lord and again merge into Him. So he's seeing this Paramatma feature, praying to this Paramatma feature that is the source of everything in the material world, and it creates everything, it maintains everything, and then reabsorbs everything in existence. So this is the Karana Daksha Vishnu, the Mahavishnu, is the Paramatma, or the super soul of material existence. He gives life to the entirety of material existence. And the Garbha Daksha Vishnu gives life to the universe. And the Kira Daksha Vishnu gives life and existence to everything within the universe, inside of every living entity. So that Lord is creating, maintaining, absorbing continuously, bhutva, bhutva, praliyate. So what is he? He's so powerful, invisible, all full, unlimited. What is he? So now he's going to say not exactly what he is, but vyatirate definition, or what he isn't. He is not woman, man, or neuter, nor is he an animal. So this way he's showing that he's nothing to do with the material world. No material conceptions actually fit him. He is not a material quality, a fruit of activity, a manifestation or non-manifestation. He is either manifest nor non-manifest. He is something beyond both manifest and non-manifest. He is beyond human, man, nuda, woman, animal. He is beyond bird, human, bird, or beast. Something in a completely different category. The categories, conceptual categories that we all have, do not reach him simply. They cannot define him. We cannot take him and place him in with one of our conceptual categories. So that's what Gajendra's realization. He is so beyond. He is the last word in the discrimination of not this and not this. Neti neti, the philosophy of discriminating between what actually is and what actually isn't. And he is unlimited. All glories to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So whatever he is all glories to him. I do not wish to live anymore, Gajendra says, after I am released from the attack of the crocodile. What is the use of an elephant's body covered externally and internally by ignorance? So he's in so much pain, he's realized the actual nature of the material world and the futility of trying to enjoy the particular body that we happen to inhabit. So he wants to become free. He's prayed to become free from the difficulty, but he doesn't want to go back to his life as before of enjoyment. Now it tastes like ashes. There is nothing in it due to the pain that he's in, the circumstances. Just like when a person is dying, he can look upon all the things that brought him happiness, or when a person is very sick, or even a little sick, we think about the things that have brought us happiness previously, and they all seem so pale and useless. So now he says, Gajendra says, what is the use of having that elephant's body covered internally, externally by ignorance? I simply desire eternal liberation from the covering of ignorance. That covering is not destroyed by the influence of time. So that's basically the false ego that traps us, the false identification with matter. But the whole material world is a covering. We identify with so many things in the material world, so therefore Shastra defines purity as sarva upari vinimuktam tat paradvena nirmalam, to be free from all upadis or designations. I am this, I am that, I am this and that. And to be purely situated in one's actual identity as a servant of Krishna. And then Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Uchate. This is a definition of bhakti. And then serve the Lord in that consciousness. In that consciousness, serve the Lord with the senses. So that is the proper consciousness for service, seva, to be done in purity. Now, Gajendra continues, text 26, fully desiring release from material life, I offer my respectful obeisances unto that Supreme Person who is the creator of the universe, who is himself the form of the universe. He is the Varata Rupa. He is the creator. And who is nonetheless transcendental to this cosmic manifestation. He creates it. Nothing exists beyond him. And yet he is beyond it. Maya titamidam sarvam jagaravyaktamurtina. He is the supreme knower of everything in this world, the supersoul of the universe. That's Gobadakshavishnu. He is the unborn, supremely situated Lord. I offer my respectful obeisances. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme, the Supersoul, the Master of all mystic yoga, who is seen in the core of the heart by perfect mystics when they are completely purified and freed from the reactions, the fruit of activities by practicing bhakti yoga. Yogisham tam nato asmi aham. So this is who the yogis aspire to see, the Lord in the heart, who is none different from the Lord of the universe, who is none different from the Supersoul of the Lord of the entirety of creation. My Lord, he continues, you are the controller of formidable strength in three kinds of energy. You appear as the reservoir of all sense pleasure and the protector of the surrendered souls. You possess unlimited energy, but you are unapproachable by those who are unable to control their senses. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you again and again. Unapproachable by those who are entangled in the material world, because he is situated on a completely different subtle platform than the world of matter. So subtle, spiritually subtle, there's different elements in the material world. There's the wood and the earth, very gross, or the most gross. And then, more subtle than that is water. More subtle than water is fire. More subtle than fire is air. And more subtle than air is ether. More subtle than ether is the mind. But the mind, even, which we struggle with from time to time when we understand its existence, is very, very gross compared to the intelligence, which also is very gross compared to the false ego. The false ego is like the reflection of consciousness in matter. It is so subtle, almost consciousness, that sense of identity. So it's so hard to perceive. We can perceive our mind moving this way and that way. And sometimes we can perceive our intelligence discriminating, weaving in and out of the mind's activities. But the false ego, we so much identify with it. Very hard to perceive. But still more fine and subtle is the Lord. He lives in the spiritual realm. How is it possible for the living entity who is grossly attached in the material world to understand him? It is only by bhakti yoga, which means not by his own power, but when the Lord chooses to reveal himself. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada's Guru Maharaj used to say, don't try and see Krishna, but act in such a way that Krishna will see you. Don't try and see Krishna, because by our power we can never see him. But when he wants to see us, then our seeing him will be very, very easy. So you possess unlimited energy, but you are unapproachable by those who are unable to control their senses. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you again and again. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by whose illusory energy, the jiva, each soul, who is part and parcel of God, forgets his real identity because of the bodily concept of life. I take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose glories are difficult to understand. That energy, the illusory energy of the Lord, is a creation of the Lord. Maya, that which is not, rests upon that which is, Krishna. It depends upon him, just like darkness depends upon light. It is a dependent energy. It is not independent. Darkness cannot be anywhere and everywhere. It has to be where there is no light. So similarly, when Krishna is present, there can be no darkness. Maya haya andhakar. Krishna surya sam. And there's one verse in the second canto that says, Maya Abhimukhe, something, Valajamanam, that Maya is too shy to stand. She cannot stand in front of the Lord. Just like the darkness cannot stand in front of the sun. So, in the darkness of Maya, we forget who we are. When we face the sun, when we're in the light, the darkness cannot be there. But we have to face the sun. So, therefore, he takes shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose glories are difficult to understand. So that means that the illusion or Maya can only be surmounted by Krishna's grace when we turn to him. And the turning to Krishna of the jiva is called surrender, sharanagati. It's a returning to our natural constitutional position, sharanagati, surrender. So Krishna says, Savadamam Pityaja Mamekam Sharanam Raja, you come, you surrender to me alone, and this is your natural position. So we'll read some of the purports, and then we'll, if Krishna allows, we'll finish the chapter. Because after his prayers, the Lord actually responds to them. But first we'll read some of the purports. In text 26, Gajendra says, "Now, fully desiring release from material life, I offer my respectful obeisances unto that Supreme Person who is the creator of the universe." He's so powerful. What can one do other than offer respect? "Who is himself the form of the universe, and who is nonetheless transcendental to this cosmic manifestation. He is the supreme knower of everything in this world." Just imagine, he's the creator. His form is everywhere present. Yet he is beyond everything. So they're contradictory conceptions. And yet he knows everything in this world. Everything. There's nothing that he doesn't know that he's not conscious of. "He is the unborn, supremely situated Lord. I offer my respectful obeisances unto him." Prabhupada's purport. Sometimes when bhakti yoga, Krishna consciousness, is preached to the common man, people argue, "Where is Krishna? Where is God? Can you show him to us?" In this verse, the answer is given that if we are sufficiently intelligent, we must know that there is someone who has created the entire cosmic manifestation, who has supplied and has become the ingredients for this cosmic manifestation. This was the great criticism that Srila Prabhupada made against the scientists, is that they dared to say, always, and practically their whole business is to prove that God doesn't exist. Oh, then where did everything come from? Where did the wood and the cups and the glass and the air, where did it come from? Oh, it came from, where did it come from? What's the current theory? In those days when Prabhupada was speaking, he would speak about the chunk theory, that there was an explosion or a chunk of some chunk. Now they don't talk about chunks anymore because the theory is changing continuously. Now it's a big bang. So then Prabhupada would say, "So where did the chunk come from that exploded?" And the scientists will give another answer. "Oh, it came from this." Or they'll never say that it came from the same type of... they'll never say that it had a source. And that source is God. They'll say anything but say that. So now they say that it came from a black hole or something, and there are many black holes in existence, and the black holes, there is everything just enters into them. There is there's a dense hole in the universe, so dense that it's a singularity, they call it, and it has such a pull that all matter will enters in there. But if it's like a hole, a black hole, where does it go when it enters in there? They'll say anything. They'll make up any kind of story, excuse, reason, scientific fact, prove anything, but they'll never say, yes, it is God. Everything, when it's pulled back again, it is pulled back into God. They'll never say that. And when it comes out, they talk about the black holes that pull everything in, and then they talk about it after the Big Bang, at the first moment of creation, everything was expanding. It's an always expanding universe, and then it's contracting. They'll never say it's expanding from God. And they'll never say it's contracting into Him. So practically speaking, this is the purpose of the scientific theories, to disprove the existence of God. And more or less, we can see from the result, what happens. Where do people put their faith? Previously, people thought of course there was always medicine, but they thought that it's up to, if I have trouble, if I'm going to be saved from my disease or some problem, it's God who will save me. But now everyone has their faith in science. So they are the new priests. Materialism. They are the priests of materialism. So the result of this in society has been actually horrible. Society has become immoral, practically demonic. People complain when they go to churches or temples that the people in the churches and temples are always trying to get money from them. But what to speak of the scientists, those priests? They're hooked right up to the government, and that's where so much of the money of the government goes. The parts that doesn't go into the pockets of the politician goes into the pockets of the scientists supporting research. Billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars. So these priests, they don't bother asking you to give. They tax you. Huge percentages go to them. So the Lord, so people, so Prabhupada would criticize. He's so strong in his criticism. He calls them rascals and fools. Rascals, rascals, rascals. They can't even see the difference between a dead body and a live body. And what is the difference? Something has clearly gone. Even though they're so intelligent, given so much respect, but Prabhupada calls them rascals because they don't know the basis, the simple basis of philosophy, that which gives life to the body. And it's so clear. It's so clear when you see a person who has left their body, we use that term, they've left their body, because that's really what it appears. They've left the body. The life, that which gave life to the body, is gone. And now the body is a dead body. It is lifeless. That which gave life, the soul, isn't there. And Prabhupada said, he would say it's just the most obvious thing. Even a child can understand it. And these people don't understand it. Therefore, rascals, cheaters, and so many strong words he would use. And then sometimes Prabhupada would be talking and someone would say, you're speaking so harshly. You speak too hard. And Prabhupada would say, no, I don't speak hard enough. And then he would say, rascals, cheaters, because this is really their business, denying the existence of God and pulling the common people who are innocent, basically. Most people are innocent. They follow the leader. So when the mood is set for atheism, they become atheists. And when the mood is set for theism, they become theists. Simply on the basis of this suggestion that it is God who has supplied all the ingredients and nothing is separate from Him, Prabhupada finishes this purport saying, simply on the basis of this suggestion, one can offer respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Lord. This is the beginning of devotional life. Text 27. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme. So instead, so here is an elephant, an animal. He's noting that everything comes from God, and therefore he's offering obeisances. So Prabhupada would criticize the people as less than animals. Less than animals. Because they refuse to acknowledge that anything is greater than them. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme, the Supersoul, the Master of all mystic yoga, who is seen in the core of the heart by perfect mystics when they have completely purified, when they are completely purified and freed from the reactions of fruit of activity by practicing bhakti yoga. We'll read the first half of Prabhupada's purport. The king of the elephants, Gajendra, simply accepted that there must be someone who has created this cosmic manifestation and has supplied its ingredients. He accepts that. If this exists, there must be a creator. Look around. Did this have a creator? 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 This, or the black holes suddenly pulse out cups and tables and seats and windows and flowers. Everything in our experience has a cause. And yet, without being able to prove it, they say that the universe really doesn't have a cause, or they say that in an indirect way it's caused by a great explosion, the Big Bang. But who set off the Big Bang? They won't say that. Who set off the Big Bang then? Everything comes from all our experience. There's nothing in experience that doesn't have a cause. So how could we assume, how could these people assume that there's no cause to the creation? And that is the beginning of theism. Just looking up at the stars, looking at the plants, looking at anything, and saying there must be a cause to this. Things that are orderly. If you've ever tried to organize anything in this world, as soon as you don't apply intelligence to it, it turns into chaos. So it takes continuous application of power. Intelligence and energy and power to keep things organized. And we see that the plants are growing in an organized way. This is working in the sun, the moon, the stars, the seasons. And that doesn't take energy. The planets are floating in space. That doesn't take energy and intelligence. Oh, it's just happening by chance. What if they run their bank accounts just by chance and not take a salary if things work by chance? No. That's different. So therefore, Prabhupada would say rascals and cheaters and fools and on and on. Very, very, very heavy. He simply accepted there must be someone who has created this cosmic manifestation and has supplied its ingredients. This should be admitted by everyone, even the most determined atheists, because they have no grounds to say that that things are coming from nowhere. It's beyond experience. Prove it. Scientists, prove it. Prove that something comes from nothing. Take some nothing. First you have to find the nothing. And then make some, and then allow something to come from it. And then you could say yes. Or if you say that life comes from matter, at least produce one mosquito. Or sometimes Prabhupada say, if they want an egg, why don't they just take some, the chemicals and mix it together? Why do they have to have the chickens? If they can just find the chemicals, chemical composition, they're so intelligent. Why don't they just make eggs and wheat? No. All these things come from life. And the life comes from Krishna. So even the atheist prophet, they should admit there is God. Nice statement. But then they wouldn't be atheists. Because it's certain determinedness of the consciousness that makes you an atheist. Why then do the non-devotees and atheists not admit this? The reason is that they are polluted by the reactions of their fruitive activities. One must be freed from all the dirt accumulated within the heart to fruitive activities performed one after another. One must wash off this dirt by practicing bhakti yoga. So sinful activities of Kali Yuga make people into blind atheists due to the sinful reactions. Look, everyone's heart becomes covered and they cannot see the obvious. What is obvious? Again, that everything comes from somewhere. Or as Darwin's theory explains, that men came from monkeys. And everyone accepts this. But did anyone ever see a man come from a monkey? Why did it only happen once? If you think about it, it doesn't make any sense. Every year, like thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of monkeys give birth. And there is no time, at least since I was born, it's not been in the newspapers, that one monkey just happened to give birth to a human being. It just doesn't happen, but yet everyone just believes it. Oh, this is the theory of evolution. And that, it doesn't make any sense, actually, when you think about it. Not only it isn't an observable fact, but when you look at it deeply using information theory, it actually falls apart completely. Something so complex produced by chance, not actually probable or possible, or the basic principle is chance, random change, and then that helps survival. But how does the peacock's tail spread out in its incredible way when it dances? How does that help survival of the species? And how did such a complex thing, just all the parts of it, occurred at once? And it didn't gradually evolve, because say if it had one peacock feather first and then that helped it, gave it strength in its struggle against nature, then it gave birth to two, and the next gave birth to seven, and then it learned how to shake them. When it just doesn't make any sense at all. The whole theory actually is it's believed by determined atheists who have blind faith, basically. And if you try to attack this faith, if you scientifically try to disprove it, they'll call you the most nasty names. Very heavy, actually. But the reason why they think like this is dirt covering the heart from sinful activities. And that can be removed, Prabhupada explains, by bhakti yoga. My Lord, this is 28, you are the controller of formidable strength in three kinds of energy: goodness, passion, ignorance. You appear as the reservoir of all sense pleasure and the protector of the surrendered souls. You possess unlimited energy, but you are unapproachable by those who are unable to control their senses. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you again and again. Purport. Attachment, greed, and lust are three formidable forces that prevent one from concentrating upon the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Attachment, material attachment, greed, and lust. Three formidable forces. What does formidable mean? Powerful, hard to overcome, very strong forces, and they prevent one from concentrating on the lotus feet of the Personality of God. This is passion and ignorance. These forces act because the Supreme Lord does not like to be realized by non-devotees and atheists. Mudayam nabijananti. However, when one surrenders unto the lotus feet of the Lord, these impediments are withdrawn, and one can realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the Lord is the protector of the surrendered soul. One cannot become a devotee until one surrenders unto the Lord's lotus feet. Then the Lord gives one the intelligence from within by which one can return home back to Godhead. So that's the last of... There's one more. We already read the last of the verses. Now, we're continuing after Gajendra's completed his prayers. Sukadeva Goswami continued. When the king of the elephants was describing the supreme authority without mentioning any particular person, he did not invoke the demigods headed by Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Indra, and Chandra. None of them approached him. However, because Lord Hari is the Supersoul, Purushottam, the Personality of Godhead, he appeared before Gajendra. The beginning of Prabhupada's purport. From the description of Gajendra, he apparently was aiming at the Supreme Authority, although he did not know who the Supreme Authority is. He conjectured, there is a supreme authority who is above everything. Under the circumstance, the Lord's various expansions, such as Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Chandra, and Indra, all thought, Gajendra is not asking our help, he is asking the help of the Supreme, who is above all of us. So they didn't come. And we'll skip it till the beginning of the next paragraph. It may be also concluded that since a tree lives on the strength of its root, and when the root is nourished with water, all the parts of the tree are nourished, one should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the original root of everything. Although the Supreme Personality of Godhead is very difficult to approach, he is very near to us because he lives within our hearts. As soon as the Lord understands that one is seeking his favor by fully surrendering, naturally he immediately takes action. Therefore, although the demigods did not come to the aid of Gajendra, the Supreme Personality of God had immediately appeared before him because of his fervent prayer. This does not mean that the demigods were angry with Gajendra, for actually when Lord Vishnu is worshipped, all the other demigods were also worshipped. Yasmin tushte jagat tushtam. If the Supreme Personality of Godhead is satisfied, everyone is satisfied. Yata tara mulanas cheschanena tripyanti tatskanda bujopasaka panopaharacha yatendriyanam tataiva savahanam machuteja. As pouring water on the root of a tree energizes the trunk, branches, twigs, and everything else, and as supplying food to the stomach enlivens the senses and limbs of the body, so simply worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead through devotional service automatically satisfies the demigods who are parts of the Supreme Personality. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead is worshipped, all the demigods are satisfied. Text 31. After understanding the awkward condition of Gajendra, who had offered his prayers, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, who lives everywhere, appeared with the demigods who were offering prayers to him. Carrying his disc and other weapons, he appeared there on the back of his carrier, whose name was Garuda, with great speed according to his desire. Thus he appeared before Gajendra, because he's everywhere. So very quickly he came. As soon as Gajendra had finished his prayers, he came, his fervent prayers. Prabhupada's purport. Short. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur specifically hints that since Gajendra was in such a difficult position and was praying for the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the demigods, who could have immediately gone to his rescue, hesitated to go there. Since they considered Gajendra's prayer to be directed towards the Lord, they felt offended, and this in itself was offensive. Consequently, when the Lord went there, They also went and offered prayers to the Lord so that their offense might be excused. Gajendra had been forcibly captured by the crocodile in the water and was feeling acute pain. But when he saw that Narayan, wielding his disc, was coming in the sky on the back of Garuda, he immediately took a lotus flower in his trunk. And with great difficulty, due to his painful condition, he uttered the following words, "O my Lord Narayan, Master of the Universe, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you." Prabhupada's purport. The king of the elephants was so eager to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead that when he saw the Lord coming in the sky with great pain and in a feeble voice, he offered respect to the Lord. A devotee does not consider a dangerous position to be dangerous, for in such a dangerous position, he can fervently pray to the Lord in great ecstasy. Thus a devotee regards danger as a good opportunity. Tate anukampamsu samikshamana. When a devotee is in great danger, he sees that danger to be the great mercy of the Lord, because it is an opportunity to think of the Lord very sincerely and with undiverted attention. Tate anukampamsu samikshamana. Bunjana evatma kritam vipakam. Bhagavatam 10:14-8. He does not accuse the Supreme Personality of Godhead for letting his devotee fall into such a dangerous condition. Rather, he considers that dangerous condition to be due to his past misdeeds and takes it as an opportunity to pray to the Lord and offer thanks for having been given such an opportunity. This one ability in all circumstances to seek Krishna's mercy and to take shelter of him, this one ability makes one eligible to go back to the spiritual world. Inherit the spiritual world just as a son naturally inherits the property of his father. But it is not an easy ability to achieve. One has to be very deep in his Krishna consciousness in all circumstances to see Krishna's mercy, what to speak of the most dangerous circumstances, and be praying and thanking Krishna with vag vibhapodam vadatanam namaste, with words, but not only with the body in words, but not only with the body in the words, but with the mind fully. Very difficult. One has true devotion to be able to do that. He does not accuse the Supreme Personality of Godhead for having let his devotee fall into such a dangerous condition. Rather, he considers that dangerous condition to be due to his past misdeeds and takes it as an opportunity to pray to the Lord and offer thanks for having been given such an opportunity. He doesn't become angry, so one has to be free from anger. That means free from passion and ignorance. Very difficult. But when Prabhupada explains it, it doesn't sound difficult. It sounds very wonderful. Because we should aspire for this. We should chant very sincerely and aspire for this. When a devotee lives in this way, his salvation, his going back home, back to Godhead, is guaranteed. We can see this to be true from the example of Gajendra, who anxiously prayed to the Lord and thus received an immediate chance to return home, back to Godhead. Thereafter, the final verse in the chapter, and it has no purport. Thereafter, seeing Gajendra in such an aggrieved position, the unborn Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari. What does Hari mean? He who takes away. So he's going to take away Gajendra's distress. He immediately got down from the back of Garuda by his causeless mercy and pulled the king of elephants along with the crocodile out of the water. Then in the presence of all the demigods who were looking on, the Lord severed the crocodile's mouth from its body, with his disc. In this way, he saved Gajendra, the king of the elephants. Thus, in the Bhaktivedanta purports of the eighth canto, third chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, titled Gajendra's Prayers of Surrender. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? Yes.
They try to quantify it by saying it's happened from a quantum leaping in the theory of relativity. So the theory of relativity is from one point slowly gradually heats up, like if you're boiling water, from one point slowly gradually rises. So you've got peak. The quantum leap, you have one point and then just suddenly jumps to another point like that.
Yeah.
So they're trying to kind of reconcile those two theories together to explain the Big Bang.
So it's actually it's the boiling water theory.
Yeah.
So where did they get the idea from? So some scientist was probably, he's probably watching, he's waiting for his water, and he had nothing to do, right? So he came up, this must be just like the whole creation of the universe. Is that really where it came from? Where it comes from?
But why does water boil?
It needs a person behind it heating it. So if there's some parallel, there's a person who's vacuuming out all the things into the black hole. They'll never say that there's a person. They'll say water is boiling, it was starting to boil, and then there's a point where before it was not boiling, and then there's a point, there's a leap, and suddenly it's boiling from the same. But where is the energy coming from? They'll never talk about that part. That there's always a person behind it, always a cause behind it. So therefore, Prabhupada continuously calls them rascals and rascals and rascals. They'll say so many things, but they won't say that. So is there something that sort of becomes, in becoming a black hole? Is that the point? That, and then suddenly it becomes a black hole? So then what's making it happen? Where is the cause of it suddenly becoming a black hole? And then it leaps into its position of singularity. Where is the energy coming from? What's causing it? Where is there any intelligence behind it? They won't talk about that. But it's an obvious question. Yeah. Asorim, Rakshipshim. That one?
Yeah,
go ahead and finish. Finish the verse.
Rakshasim Suram Chayava Prakritim Mohim Shrita.
Yeah, very good. Thank you. And that means?
Translation. Those who thus the world take show of demoniac and atheistic foods, in that deluded condition, their hopes for liberation, freedom activities, and their culture of knowledge are all defeated.
Because of a demonic viewpoint. And what's the cause of the demonic viewpoint?
Ignorance.
Envy, lust, anger, greed. So Krishna doesn't want to reveal himself to them, even though they're so intelligent. Mayaya apita gyan. So he gives them alternative viewpoints. Anything, they'll think anything but see him. So he says, very good, see if I care. And what happens to them? Explained in the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Tanaham dushita kroran sansireshin aradama chipramadasamasuram asuram eva yonashu. They're thrown down into demonic, further demonic species of life. One of the acharyas asked the question in the Bhagavad Gita, can't you save them? God is all powerful. Why can't you save them and change them? Is God all powerful? Yes. Then why don't you save them? I don't want to. There's no inclination to save people who are in this. Like that. But on the other hand, if someone surrenders, even though they may be lacking so many things, if someone surrenders, he has a full inclination. Even if he's an animal, like Gajendra, if someone surrenders, he has a full inclination. Okay, thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Gajendra ki jai, Srupa Bhadi ki jai.